You're listening to Pass the Book to Fifi, brought to you by Binz Media Group, amplifying the voices you want to hear.
Welcome to the Pass the Book to Fifi podcast. This is an extra special moment. This is the very first episode. And today, I'm literally speaking to Varian Johnson. Varian is the author of several novels for children and young adults, including The Parker Inheritance, which won both Coretta Scott King Author Honor and Boston Globe and Horn Book Honor Awards, The Great Green Heist, an ALA Notable Children's Book, a Kirkus Reviews Best Book, and a Texas Library Association Long Star List selection. And the graphic novel Twins, co-created with Shannon Wright, an NPR best book. He lives with his family near Austin, Texas. You can visit him on the web at varianjohnson.com and on Twitter at Varian Johnson. Varian, welcome to the virtual living room and consider yourself blessed and highly favored because you, sir, are setting the tone and template for all others who come after you. And to celebrate the occasion, Varian, I'm rocking my new t-shirt in honor of your recent middle-grade novel, Playing the Cards You're Dealt. I've got four and a possible. If you don't know what that means, you can't be my partner. Now, I wanted to phonetically spell it partner, because you know that's just how we do, right?
I know, I feel bad. I should have worn my shirt. I have a six and a possible shirt just like that. I should have put it on.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Now, Varian, for those who have not read the book, could you give us an elevator speech?
Sure. Playing the Cards You're Dealt is about 10-year-old Anthony Ant Joplin. He's getting ready for the big space tournament that takes place every year at their community park. The space tournament is a big-time Joplin Man tradition. It's a big community tradition with Ant's brother, his father, and his grandfather winning before. Now, this is Ant's second year participating in the tournament. He and his partner played last year, but their results were less than satisfactory. They got run out of tournament, and what's worse, when Ant lost and was bounced from the tournament, he ran off and he cried. He showed lots of emotions. And that's not good enough for his father. So his father's trying to get him ready for the tournament this year, trying to toughen him up, trying to show him what it means to be strong, what it means to be a Joplin man, how to uphold that tradition. But while Ant's getting ready for the tournament, he's starting to see some kind of fissures, some cracks in his father's tough exterior. He figures out that his father is hiding some secrets, some dark secrets that threaten to tear Ant's family apart. All that being said, the book sounds heavy, and it certainly deals with heavy issues, dealing with substance abuse issues and such. But it's also a really fun, funny book that celebrates spades, that celebrates community, and certainly celebrates Black joy and Black excellence as well.
I couldn't agree more, Varian. I am going to do my very best not to spoil it for those who haven't read it yet. But I have to say, Varian, this book is giving me very much Five Stair Steps vibes. You remember the group, The Five Stair Steps? Ooh, child, things are gonna get easier. You know, kids are walking to school, stopping to talk to neighbors, you know, respecting the elders. The narrator is saying things like young blood. And there are plenty of old school idioms throughout the book. This was absolutely a refreshing read, I have to say. One question I wrote the book in third-person omniscient. Can you tell me why?
Sure. Originally, I wrote the book that way to try to get to explain the game of spades. Often, some tricks that authors use when we're entering a new world or explaining something new to a character or to the reader, the character is new to it as well. So we're seeing it through their eyes. And as they experience it for the first time, readers experience it for the first time as well. I didn't want to do this for this book. I wanted space to be very entrenched in Ant's life and then with the community's life. So he would already know the rules. So I needed another way to present them So I had this omniscient narrator addressing the reader, often calling them young blood, and explaining the game of spades. And then after I decided to do that, I figured, well, why stop there? Let's make this narrator an active part of the narrative, and let's give them some voice, some style. So I channeled lots of 60s and 70s music. I channeled kind of the old man at the barbershop with nothing else to do but sit there and complain type vibe to try to get that into that voice. And add some humor to it as well, too. So that's kind of how it all came about and why I kept and maintained that omniscient third-person voice.
Well, I have to throw in a little teaser here for everyone. The voice is not identifiable at first, but there's a little surprise at the end for those who haven't read the book yet. Now, we're talking about, it seems like we're talking about the game of spades versus the game of life. Now, what I know about spades, it's steeped in tradition, there's strategy and careful decision making, and good partners are chosen with great care. And there's a lot of trash talk. Now, Ed's father, Roland, places great emphasis in comparing the game of spades with the game of life, or as he sees it in becoming a man. Talk about this for a moment, Barry.
Sure. I think, you know, there are lots of parallels between the game and between life. Certainly, you know, the title, playing the cards you dealt. Sometimes you got to roll with the hand you got. But also finding that right partner, someone who you work well with, who bolsters your weaknesses and who accentuates your strengths. Someone who's always got your back. It's just really, really important for Roland to kind of express that, finding that in the game, but also in life as well, too. And Ant starts to kind of explore that on his own. He's got one partner at the beginning of the book, his friend Jamal, his best friend, but Jamal's kind of changing a little bit as well, too, dealing with, you know, struggling with what it means to be a man and probably leaning into some of the more toxic ideas of toxic masculinity. You know, Ant ends up pairing with another partner, Shirley, who is a little rocky road at first. You know, Shirley's got a lot of trash talk in her as well, but they end up being really, really good partners, both on the card table and away from it, being good friends and being there to support each other when they need it. And I guess that's really part of it, just thinking about that idea of being a good partner, being a good friend, while also not losing the trash talk aspect. Because, you know, spades ain't spades without trash talk.
Sometimes right, and you gotta have balance.
You gotta be a balance. But you know what? So good trash talk, you know, you gotta have a little bit of it.
Right, right. I couldn't agree more. Now, culture, one of the things that was prominent to me as I was reading the book is culture was weaved throughout the story. The authenticity of the book, from beginning to end, Barry, you did a stellar job of staying true to the story and culture, Black culture. You know, grapefruit juice comes off the scene with the red silo cup, and there's references like the house always wins, and don't write a check, your butt can't cash, and no lollygagging. I haven't heard those references and phrases since I was a little girl, Barry. Talk about that a little bit.
You know, I had two daughters, 7 and 10, and last year, we were trying to get, we're trying to get to school. Like, girl, come on, don't lollygag, we gotta go. And they stopped, they're like, what does lollygagging mean? I'm like, girl, I'll explain later. You gotta keep walking, let's go. You know, I think culture and celebrating our culture is important. And you know, to me, community was important in that book. I wanted to feel like the community I grew up with, I wanted to feel like the community my dad grew up with. Everyone's always there. They kind of always know your business, whether you want them to or not. But they're always there trying to, usually hoping for the best for you and helping to guide you along the way. I wanted to kind of showcase and celebrate that and show that, you know, there is different facets to Black culture. And this is certainly my idea of what Southern Black culture, at least in my hometown, would look like.
Right, right. You know, there's been a lot of conversation in the education system about culturally relevant pedagogy and culturally relevant teaching. These concepts are expressed and taught in the classroom, things that build character, empathy, compassion, kindness, those things that open those pathways. With respect to playing the cards you're dealt, in your opinion, how could the book be used to emphasize these concepts, character and compassion and kindness?
You know, this is a good question. I think certainly when I think about empathy and kindness, I think Ant's in a really tough spot, right? He's finding out that his dad is abusing alcohol and he loves him, but he doesn't know what to do with that. And there are some characters in the book, like his friend Jamal, that doesn't quite empathize with that, who doesn't understand how big of a deal, how problematic this is for not only Roland, but for Ant as well, too, to imagine this. Whereas we have Shirley, who does kind of understand what Ant is going through and tries to be a good friend for him. And vice versa, he tries to be a good friend for her. So I do hope readers kind of see that even if you don't understand what someone is going through, you can empathize with them. You can sympathize with them. You can be a good friend. And I also hope that, you know, Dr. Radin Sims Bishop talks about books being mirrors, windows, and sliding glass doors. And I hope this book can serve readers in all of those ways. Certainly for someone to see themselves, you know, in the book, but also to see someone else's experience. And it gives them a safe way to try to explore someone else's situation or even open that sliding glass door and live and walk and journey through that experience for a little bit.
I think that is absolutely perfect. We're going to stop right there, Varian. We've got to pay the light bill. So when we come back, we're going to talk about, is it important to you as an author that children are able to see themselves not only in the text, but on the cover? We'll be right back. Varian Johnson.
Many thanks to our sponsor at Little Shop of Stories. Little Shop of Stories is an independent bookstore in Decatur, Georgia, for children and the grown-ups they become. Little Shop is proud to partner with Page Turner's Make Great Learners to bring many of the top names in children's and young adult literature to students in the Atlanta metro area and beyond.
Hi, I'm Fifi, and you're listening to the Pass the Book to Fifi podcast show.
We're back with Varian Johnson. We're talking about playing the cards that you're dealt. Varian, before the break, we were talking about, does it matter to you that the author writes a book where children can see themselves on the cover and read about their experiences in the text? I believe that you touched on that, but can you talk about that a little bit more, the importance of children seeing themselves in your books?
Sure. First, I want to give a shout out to Frank Morrison. Frank did a phenomenal job on this cover. You know, Frank is a talented artist. He's a talented illustrator. He's got his own author-illustrated book coming out next year about skateboarding that I hope everyone checks out. But Frank just did a phenomenal job of showcasing this amazing Black boy, his family, and friends on this cover with designer Elizabeth Parisi. Because, yes, it is important to see yourself in books. I think we've certainly come a long way with that, with characters seeing themselves represented, or readers seeing themselves represented. But we can always do better. We need to make sure that we're showcasing different stories, different locations. You know, we're not a monolith. We don't just have one story.
Right.
But I'll add, it's also just as important for readers to see the creators behind a book as well, too. For me, my writing journey really began when I read a book by Walter D. Myers, a book called Motown and Dee Dee, and discovered not only did the characters in the book look like me, but the creator, the author behind the book, was Black like me as well. And I think it's so important, again, for kids of color, for Black kids to see that, but also for other kids to see that I'm a normal Black guy that writes books, and right. to go against that negative stereotype that's often perpetuated through the media.
Right. You're exactly right. I just remember as you were reflecting on your childhood and Walter Dean Myers. And I know that you mentioned that in other interviews about the importance of the Walter Dean Myers of the world. I just remember there not being a huge variety when I was a little girl of books where I could see myself and read about my experiences. So this book is a hit, I think, just in terms of children being able to pull that book off the shelves and able to see themselves in your writing and in your body of work. Now let's talk about the characters, Varian. The main character, and you touched on this earlier, Anthony Joplin, aka Ant, as he's referred to in the book, and his best friend Jamal Williams. They're fifth graders, but they're facing some pretty heavy, mature situations and challenges in the book. Why did you decide to give the characters tough situations to deal with?
Well, you know, I think that's just life. I think there's, unfortunately, a lot of kids in fifth grade or even younger who are dealing with tough family situations. And I think we don't do our readers a service by pretending that that doesn't exist. I think we have to present it in a real way, but also in an accessible way for young readers, for those who are living it and for those who aren't living it. So, you know, I didn't want to sugarcoat things, but also, again, using that omniscient third person voice, I was able to inject humor in certain situations, pull back a little bit, zoom in close sometimes to try to make sure that it felt right for that age range. I didn't want things to feel impossible for Ant, but I certainly wanted him to struggle. And I want the reader to be able to see him struggling as well.
Right. I think nothing was more true than in COVID, Varian, where we had parents trying to figure out, use books actually, and really refer to books in a way to approach difficult conversations. What was going on and around the world last year, the civil unrest. So how do we approach these difficult conversations with our children? How do we approach difficult conversations in the workplace and in our community? I think that you demonstrated very well in the book how to approach those conversations and then lighten the mood and add a little bit of human humor and humanness. So you did a great job with that. Now let's talk about one of the characters, Shirley. Shirley, I have to say, is my favorite character. She's wise beyond her years. And I love that she appears on the same scene, demonstrating that actions speak louder than words. And she commands respect only like a young lady should. Talk about Shirley for a minute.
Shirley is probably my favorite character in the book. And I love Shirley. One of my issues with Shirley when I was writing it, I think real characters have blemishes and flaws. And Shirley was really a really strong, really great character, but almost flawless at first. And my editor said, this is great, but like Shirley, certainly like everyone else, has imperfections. What can you accentuate about Shirley to show some of these things as well too? And so I really leaned into the trash talking bit of it and the idea of Shirley sometimes taking that a little bit too far and sometimes being on the offensive. Because again, sometimes she commands respect as she should, but I wanted to show where sometimes it could go a little bit overboard. And so when she had to kind of reel that back in, certainly when she's dealing with someone like Ant, who is trying to be respectful toward her versus Jamal, who is unfortunately trying to lean into some other negative attributes of masculinity, of toxic masculinity. But yeah, she's great. And she's a great example of being how to be a good partner and a good friend to someone, as she and Ant kind of figure out how to be partners on at the space table, but then how to be partners and friends kind of in real life and away from playing spades as well.
Now, what I find that's interesting, to your point, Shirley and Ant had role models in the home variant to demonstrate good behavior, sportsmanship, kindness. But Jamal kind of didn't have that. And I'm thinking particularly about his older brother, you know, modeling that kind of behavior. And sometimes we view masculinity, now that you've talked about your childhood as well, and role models and friends and that sort of thing. And especially, I think, when you went to FAMU, I think, for a science camp or something like that. But looking at masculinity as being a bully, you know, of sort, or taking it too far, as you said. But I'm particularly thinking about Jamal's older brother and there being role models or some sort of example that you can model that good masculinity and what it means to be respectful. Now, with respect to Roland, Ant's father, Varian, there's a sense of pride and tradition in being a Joplin man. What was this emphasized in the book? You know, as Black families are, you know, there's a lot of emphasis placed on our last names and what it means to be a man. Talk about that for a moment.
Sure. I mean, I think in some ways, our name and our reputation is all we have. And that family legacy goes on. We want our families, our children, our sons, our daughters, to do well. And I think we've got to the point where we can explore how to best set up our kids for success. I feel like that's evolved over the years. I certainly think there was this, and probably still is, this idea of the man being, you know, the absolute head of the household. He always knows the right way, strong and silent type. He takes all these burdens on himself. And I don't think that works for Ant. Ant just wears his emotions on his sleeve too much. There's different ways to be strong. And I think Roland and trying to hold everything in is showing that doesn't work so well for him either. But it's the way he feels he has to be. Like, the world is not a kind world. It's not an easy world. It's not easy to be a Black kid, a Black child, a Black man in this world. And so I think Roland is trying to toughen him up and getting him ready for that. In some ways, I think Todd is trying to do that for Jamal, not realizing that, yes, it is hard to be a young Black man in the world, but there are different ways to show that strength and to be yourself. And you don't have to put someone else down or degrade someone else in order to rise up above them. There are different ways to do that. So I think he wants his son to be okay. He wants him to uphold this Joplin man tradition, this success, certainly in the spades tournament, but in life as well, too. But he's not quite sure how to get Ant to see that. And his way is not really working for him, I would say.
Right. Well, it seems like all of the characters are navigating emotions, right? Ant is navigating being a fifth grader. He's too young to be a part of the conversation. He's too young to know certain things that are being discussed within the family. And throughout the story, you carry this secret that Ant is aware of, but he has no clue what the secret is. Ant's mom, Yolanda, makes the decision to share with Anthony the big family secret, and one that not only breaks his spirit, but diminishes his trust in his father. Why did you make the decision for Yolanda to share the big secret with Ant?
It was time, you know. I think every parent wants to protect their child. And sometimes we don't know what a child is ready to hear. I also think sometimes we make the best decisions out of love, and sometimes those are the wrong decisions. Even Roland is not a mean person, or he's not doing these things he's doing out of spite, at least. He's doing them out of love. He's doing what he thinks is best for his family. It just happens not to be the case. And I think that's what Yolanda is doing there. She's trying to protect Ant and trying to protect this relationship he has with his father, because he does look up to him so much. And they both need it. They both draw so much energy and love from that father-son bond. And she's worried that it's going to break his heart. And it does. It changes everything in his life. But also, he's starting to realize, he's old enough to realize, okay, my dad doesn't have to be perfect. I can still love him. He can make mistakes. I still want the best for him. we're all complex characters in real life, right? We're all very complex. We have all facets to us. And I wanted to showcase that as well in the book.
Wow. Now, Anna is constantly reminded of a past mistake, which really isn't a big deal. Is, you know, his friends, foes, and even his father won't let him live down what seems to be one of the biggest mistakes. I find it interesting that you chose Ant to remind his father of one of his biggest mistakes. Was this intentional?
Yeah. I don't know if it was intentional when I was writing the book. Maybe subconsciously. But I did know at the end I wanted Ant and his father to have their face off one-on-one. But I also wanted to feel a little bit different. I think Ant has grown that he knows he can have support and friends and people there with him. Even though he's having a conversation with his father, he's got a community of people there that have his back, that are supporting him, that are kind of giving him strength. But Ant also needs to be the one to talk to his father about this. I just felt... it felt right, and it felt weighty. And now looking back, seeing how his father was writing him about Ant's mistakes, now Ant's kind of explaining to his father the same thing, but also saying he still loves him. Yeah, sure, we're going to say that's intentional, although I really don't know if it was intentional at the time I was writing it.
Well, I think it's very clever that there's something to be said about parents and adults learning from their children as children learn from their parents. Going to take a little bit of a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the message that you'd like to leave with young people who read your book. We'll be right back.
Ben's Media Group provides uplifting and entertaining content for the masses. Inspired by the need to amplify the important voices in our community, Ben's Media Group brings inspirational and life-changing content to a dedicated audience that has the power to change the world.
Hi, I'm Fifi, and you're listening to the Pass the Book to Fifi podcast show.
And we're back with Varian Johnson. I asked a question before the break. What message would you like to leave for young people who read your book on how to play the cards you're dealt?
You know, messages are always tricky, I think. I often, when I write a book, I certainly have themes in mind, but I don't know if I always have a strong message. I do think that there's something I like to call the author-reader contract, right? I write a book, and it goes out to the world, and the reader reads it and brings their ideas, their backstory, their history, all that with reading the book, and they get out of it what they want to get out of it. I kind of myself, it doesn't matter what I want you to get out of it, because I'm not there to tell you anymore. You're going to get out of it what you get out of it. That being said, I do think some readers will read this, and maybe will love to learn the game of spades, right? And I think that would be great. I think everybody should be playing spades. I also hope that folks are able to see themselves in the book, right? And see positive identities of Blackhood and what it means to be a Black man, a Black boy, and that it can look different for different people. I hope they can find success, you know, examples of success and community in the book as well, too. And I hope it's fun. You know, I really, really hope they read the book and enjoy it and laugh at some of the same jokes that I wrote and laughed at, too. Really, it's kind of a smorgasbord of things that I hope they get for it. I guess I will say one other thing. I do hope that they realize that it's okay to make mistakes and that you can bounce back.
Right.
You just need good friends in your corner. You need a good partner. You need good people around you. And if they get any of those things, hopefully I feel like I'm doing my job.
Well, I think you did an excellent job, Varian. One of my last questions, I noticed that you dedicated this book to your dad. Would you like to share with us why?
Yeah, sure. Boy, you know, I've been talking about this book for a couple of months now. It's been out for a month at the time we're recording this. And like, I still kind of have to pause a little bit whenever I think about it. My dad passed away in April. And my dad certainly taught me how to play spades, how to play mid whist. I played all these games growing up. But obviously, he was much more than that. He was just this larger than life figure. And I always wanted to be like him. And, you know, I think about Ant and Roland's relationship. And me and my dad's relationship was certainly similar in some ways. My dad didn't have that type of substance abuse issue, but he wasn't a perfect man, right? He had his own flaws like we all do. But at the end of the day, he wanted me to be my own person and be successful. And he was okay with me figuring that out. You know, I'm really, really grateful to Scholastic and my editor, Jenny Abramowitz, because it was a really, really last minute thing. He passed away and the book was starting to go into production. I said, okay, I know it's almost done. We're almost out of time, but can I just make this one little small change to the dedication? And she said, sure, we'll make it work. So yeah, I have it for dad. It's just, you know, I would hope if he was around, he would like the book. I hope he likes the book wherever he is. He almost always read my books. He would pretend to read them at least. And maybe he'll read this one some way in heaven or somewhere else.
Well, his legacy lives on through you, and it certainly, certainly resonates through this book. You know, and part of that is tradition. So, and speaking of tradition, I'd like to start a tradition beginning with you, if I may, Varian. Take a moment to think of a particularly funny or sad moment from your childhood. Looking back on it today, do you believe it had a positive or negative influence on your life? And would you share it with us?
Sure. You know, I'll talk a little bit about kind of my time at Florida A&M, at FAMU. I was there for an 8-week STEM program, specifically in engineering. And I went down there with my brother. There were about 20 kids total from high school, 10 boys, 10 girls, give or take. And I remember being in this dorm room, this dormitory with all these cool college kids, freshmen, sophomores, and juniors. And I'm this like scrawny, nerdy 16-year-old kid who's too timid to even speak. But the guys would play spades and dominoes kind of in the lounge. And my brother and I would watch them. And we wanted to play, but we were too nervous to play. And one day, one of them said, hey, why don't you come over and play with us? And my brother and I thought this was our chance to kind of show how great we are, kind of run the table and run them off the table and run the score, all this stuff. And we get smoked. We get bombed. We fail horrifically. But they said, you know, hey, just hang out and play again. Play some more. And so we would watch them and play more and more. And we got better and better and better at spades. Mm-hmm. We also got to know those other young men better. And that was great. That was amazing. We felt so cool and so older, more sophisticated. But also we started to realize that these guys, they're great sometimes, but also they sometimes say things that aren't really cool. Like they'll talk negatively about a young woman on campus. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they drink a little or then a lot, and then they become mean and hurtful towards everyone around them. And I started to think, well, is this how I want to be? Is this what it means to be cool? Is this what I have to be like to be like them? Mm-hmm. And ultimately, it was ultimately a positive experience. I loved my time there with the program, but I got to learn a lot about myself and what I found acceptable for me, the type of person, the type of young man I want to grow into, right? And like, this is cool, but that's not cool. And some guys I can still hang with, and some of you I just can't anymore. And certainly all that influenced the book as well, too. So yeah, certainly a great experience, but a real turning point in realizing that, you know, cool ain't always cool. And sometimes you gotta, you know, step away from folks who you think look so awesome because they're really not.
True, true. Now, you know, I can't let you go without asking what's next.
Okay, let's see. What is next? So I wrote this graphic novel called Twins about these twin sisters, Maureen and Francine. And I will say, I love this book. Shannon Wright is my collaborator on the book, and she just created all these beautiful images of Black kids, of Black girls and their hairstyles and their speak and their family life. Anyway, so there's going to be a sequel to this book. It's coming out sometime. I don't know when it's coming out. You know, my part writing the script is comparatively really, really easy compared to Shannon's work of doing all the artwork for it. But that will be coming in a little bit. I also have a graphic novel with DC Comics coming out next year for YA. So yeah, I've got some things on the horizon. And then I've always got some other stuff in the background too. Some secret stuff I can't say yet, but they'll be more Marian Johnson for sure.
All right. Well, we'll be looking out for it. Well, thank you, Varian, for being my first guest on the Pass the Book to Fifi podcast. I've thoroughly enjoyed our conversation, and I hope our listeners did too. Lastly, keep writing them, and we'll keep reading them.
Don't forget to tune in to the Pass the Book to Fifi podcast show every Thursday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time.
For more information on the Pass the Book to Fifi podcast show, please visit us at www.pageturnersgreatlearners.org.